Blog Talk Radio.
Getting It Right with Dr. Bowles. Good afternoon, my radio listeners. Thank you so much for joining me in central Louisiana here. It's a lovely afternoon, sun is bright, and I think we're expecting temperatures to rise up into the middle 70s, and this is following a tremendous overcast, rainy, cold space, and I expect we may have something similar starting up again tomorrow. Today, I'm continuing in the genre of social justice, and if you follow me, you know that over the last few weeks, perhaps even since the last 2 months, we've been talking about social justice and social injustice, taking various topics and exploring them. I wanted to share the social justice reality versus virtual remedies. After attending a conference this morning, and I had missed probably two consecutive annual conferences because I tire of committee that if you need to do something, you know, you meet, you decide what to do, you disperse, you go and do your part, and when you meet again, I expect some kind of forward movement, some kind of action item checklist that you come present what it is you have done and feel proud of it and see some progress to move away from what you don't like and closer to things that you like. Well, that's not happening, at least not over the last 6 years. I've gone to various city-appointed locations and sit and listen to various persons in high-paid positions talk about disparity of health care. They're governmental people from the Center for Disease Control, they're state agency persons, a couple of times we've had public health, and they stand up and they go through their mantra that Louisiana is the 50th out of 50 states, we're at the very bottom. Some contribute that to our previous governor, incumbent Governor Bobby Jindal, who gutted healthcare as well as education in Louisiana. I've not, with all of the philanthropic effort I've made, I've not been able to understand his motives if they were intended to be something progressive or positive. The net result is he's out of office and we are left on the bottom on so many issues. Public school I've talked to you about. I've talked often on the incarceration rate in the state of Louisiana. I've talked off and on the various healthcare disparities in the United States in general, but so heavily in the state of Louisiana. Well, I sat and listened to the bell toll this morning when we had a CDC representative who talked about low birth rates among Black Americans or Latinos in the United States and in Louisiana. I listened to the rates of gonorrhea going up, and syphilis going up, and chlamydia going up, and HIV going up, and the leading group are Black Americans. In all of the discussions, they talked about analyses being collected and websites you can go to and pull the statistics and the data. And they're making this flyer and that flyer, and there should be more education. Not once voluntarily did someone stop and say, we looked at color, Black, Latinos, white. And then we looked at other factors we know that can be contributing to this sexually transmitted epidemic, if you want to call it that, in Louisiana. And the biggest thing that glared, it was like the elephant in the room no one wanted to talk about, was the rate of incarceration. When a person, particularly or a man or a woman, when you go into the incarcerated system, they check you for HIV. But when they release you, they do not. And I think there's a reason. Because if you were to interpret the Constitution however you like, unjust punishment is the exposure to a life-risking, a genocidal condition such as HIV/AIDS, And if, in fact, the penal system uses it like a weapon, I've seen all kinds of television programs talking about Big Bubba wants to make you his bitch, and they threaten that we'll put you with this one and you'll be raped in jail and so forth, and the swagging pants and the inside-out pockets are all indication of the type of penal acceptance system that if you go to prison, you can be raped. Well, whatever happened to not being in circumstances that put you at risk? I advocate if you can measure the level of HIV positivity of a person going in, every one of the prisoners that are released for any reason should be measured for HIV. And if that rate has gone up, that constitutes rape, folks, because an incarcerated person doesn't own themselves. They are technically not even within a range of giving consent, not even talking opportunity. So by virtue of a conversion from non-HIV positive to an HIV positive upon release from prison is a suable offense. Someone had to rape you. There had to be some kind of a sexual contact or some kind of blood fluid, body fluid exchange. But somehow that's overlooked. We have no one even fighting that fight. I would expect that every convict, black or white, coming out of the American system would want to have their papers just like they have to report to a parole officer. I would want to report to a health officer, and I'd want to know when I came out of there, did I get anything in here, HIV, hepatitis C, hepatitis B, and if so, then the government, the state, the penal system, which is a privately owned institution, they should be liable for that exposure because that's not part of any kind of rehabilitation or incarceration. And if it is, then we are just playing games. And that was my title, Reality versus Virtual Remedy. Now that Hillary Clinton is running for president, they're airing her speeches that while her husband, Bill Clinton, was giving third strike and putting more black Americans in prison in history and giving them longer sentences for marijuana and crack cocaine than any other president in the history of the United States, she called young black men predators. And now, somehow, that's supposed to be forgotten. They've gone through and legalized marijuana, and I look at how many lives of black men are still behind bars for the same amount people can sell and make a profit. Whenever they put a tax on it, suddenly it's okay. Why are we forgotten? And how is it that black America doesn't, in some outrage, demand justice? That if we have in our 13th Amendment, you are free in this country unless you are incarcerated. Then I present that in 2016, there is slavery in these United States by virtue of the 13th Amendment, by virtue of the privatization of prisons, by virtue of Bill Clinton's third strike. But we don't seem to understand. We go through these virtual things saying, oh, my, I wonder why there is higher HIV in the black population. They're still claiming there's only 13% black people in America. And I don't understand how every census we come out exactly the same number, between 12.5, I've seen something at 14.5, but yet we're said to be procreating like rabbits, that we have to have all these IUDs and Depo-Provera's and Norform and implants to prevent us from overpopulating, and our pregnancy rates are outrageous, and our newborn rates of underbirth are outrageous. And I'm saying, then how do we stay statistically the same? How are we the only group not growing? Immigrants from Nigeria and Sierra Leone and other African countries come, and so the American eye sees black. They don't ask nationality, so the black population seems to be growing. But yet, the black American population always says 12.5 to 13% in the United States, latest census being 2014. I'm baffled on that one. Any rate, in our presentation this morning, it was more of a monologue. The questions were saved to the end. Many people, when they served their box lunch, took it and left, so the questions were not entertained by the mass that was in the audience. what I heard, and much of it I already knew, was that according to 2015 compiled statistics through CDC and other agencies, 66% of all sexually transmitted diseases, particularly chlamydia in Louisiana, where they roughly said there were 1,500 cases of chlamydia diagnosed, 66% were in Black Americans. That there were 346 new cases of gonorrhea, 80% were in Black Americans. 85% of all the syphilis diagnosed in Louisiana, and they had to say, yes, it almost tripled in its rate. 85% of the syphilis were in Black Americans. 57% of all new HIV cases diagnosed were in Black Americans. And they said, well, we need to get more educational flyers out. We need to be talking to the communities. And they went on and on. And all I could think was, as job security for CDC, it's a new job for some person in healthcare or a public health service who will be generating booklets and who will be holding some kind of conference and meanwhile getting 5- and 6-figure salaries. Black Americans have high sexually transmitted disease because it originates primarily in the incarcerated state. That is a collected pool of persons. Wouldn't be in prison, many of them, if they had been upstanding citizens, so the likelihood that they are not the top creme de la creme means the intermingling with the population will increase the incidence of whatever it is the population harbors. And they gave ages, men, 18 to 45. What is the highest incarceration rate of Black Americans in the United States? 18 to 45. So all the correlative points, all of the relevant relationships are there, but no one's drawing the dots. Why? Because capitalism is booming prison industry. And in case you didn't know, the number of Black Americans incarcerated in the United States is greater than the sum of 10 other countries. You heard me, countries. I looked this up. It said that the number of Black Americans incarcerated is greater than the sum total of people incarcerated in India. And India has, 5 billion people? India's huge. It says India plus Argentina plus Canada plus Lebanon plus Japan plus Germany plus Finland plus Israel plus England. You'd have to add up all of the incarcerated in those countries. I didn't say city states. I said countries. To arrive at the number that's incarcerated in this United States. I don't know about you, but I have a problem with that. That should be one thing where we shake our head and say, wait a minute, this makes no sense. How can an industrialized country who say they are home of the free have the highest amount of incarcerated persons in the world? Louisiana has the highest number of incarcerated persons in the United States. These are facts. These are not guesses. These are not hypotheticals. These are realities. And the answer to the question is capitalism is booming on the prison industry. United States has decided to privatize prisons. The Constitution says prisoners are not, well, they are slaves. So we debate in the month of February Black history, and we talk about slavery and the heritage of the descendant of the slave, when in reality, Black America, you still have the highest population of slavery possibly in the world. we talked about child slavery, and we hear about children being sold into slavery, and they had all of the United Nations in an uproar for some Nigerian children that were being trafficked. And I agree that's horrendous and that's terrible, but it is no more terrible than the slavery ongoing in these United States. For those of us who can think, those of us who can understand, we are outraged. We are frustrated. It is exhausting. Once the question had time had been opened, and we had some from the floor asking, why do you think this and why do you think that? And we were getting the general whitewashed responses for education. And finally, the egg got broken when the comment about incarceration rates and sexually transmitted disease correlations. And then there were some references to culture when they said, well, the infant mortality is highest in black people. It could be because. And finally, someone asked, is there a correlation between stress of a pregnant woman and the outcome of her pregnancy? And there was a very short discussion about when African immigrants come to America, the first year, if they bear a child, a child's weight and health is equal to white Americans. But if they stay in the United States long enough, then the child begins to reflect the same kinds of underweight difficulties that are seen constitutively in the black American population. And someone had the courage on the panel to say that this suggests that the stress, the racism, the by virtue of living in the United States as a person of color, we're placed in a emotional category that can affect your health. It's like, really? You think if a mother worries every time her 12 to 16-year-old black son goes out of the house at night that he might be shot by a police officer or arrested or taken down to the jail or slammed to the ground could affect her psyche, her health, really? Do you think that a young man knowing that his mother is getting supplement from governmental supplement and government says no man can live in the house because if they do, they cut off the money. Do you think that affects his psyche and his self-worth? What is the lesson taught to a child when they never see a role model as a male? That we are picking our young men up and taking them from they build a prison based on statistics of fourth grade performance and take them into the prison system after eighth grade. I've shared with some listeners something I observed about 3 years ago. Some young girls were playing. They were black American children. And the two girls were playing house like little girls do with their teacups and their coffee. And the three-year-old brother to one of the girls came up and asked if he could play. And the sister said, no, no, you can't play. And he kept insisting, yes, I can, yes, I can. Then he became whiny. And one of the children looked at me and said, Dr. Bowles, what does a daddy do? When she asked the question initially, I thought she was kidding. And I had to realize this is a six-year-old. She's not kidding. She is very much trying to figure out what role she can assign her brother in this make-believe of a household. There was no role for a man, none whatsoever. The six-year-old girl could not figure out what to tell her brother that he could do as a contributing member of a household. When the reality of this sunk in, I was devastated, and I went to a number of people to share this story. I talked to ministers of a large church. There was no reaction. I've talked to teachers. There was no reaction. It's almost as if, okay, well, that is how it is. and I don't understand why. My answer to the child, for those who may be curious, is I told her, well, a daddy does the same thing a mommy does. And she argued with me. No, he doesn't. I couldn't convince her because she had no evidence. There was no daddy in her home. There was no discussion of daddy. If anyone talked about her daddy, it was disparaging. He didn't pay his child support, or he didn't this, or he didn't that. There was no daddy that cooked breakfast and made special pancakes. There was no daddy who braided her hair. There was no daddy who bathed her. There was no daddy who baked. There was no daddy who came home from work. And I thought, how horrible this must be for that child, because my memories are wonderful. I had a very hardworking father, and he did work several jobs, but when he was home, it was magical. I can remember my siblings and myself running to meet the car. We lived in a place such that you could see him before he was able to get to the house. We'd see the car from a distance, and we would run to the point at which we knew he had to make a turn to head for the house, and we would go to greet him that daddy was home. And memories I have, my father was a large man. My family is tall, and we would sit in his shoe or sit on his feet. I was sharing with someone how we didn't turn on the television set till daddy was home, and that sounded a bit extreme, and people would say, what do you mean? Nope, we did everything else. Mom would have chores for us, washing dishes, washing the toilet, changing the drapery. Even quilting, Mom would have bits and pieces, and we would quilt. We learned how to sew, and we had old jeans or worn-out shirts, and we'd cut designs of cloth and sew it together. Now, she would put it on the machine and finish it, but we had activities expected of us. We knew we had a value to the family. We knew we had chores. We knew the authorities that... Sometimes with my brothers, my mom would say, I am with your father gets home. And that was, whoa, my goodness, if dad was to receive the report and he was the punisher, that was supreme. And I looked at the dynamics in this family where a child had no concept of this person. This was a phantom person to her. I could tell her about my father, but it had no reality to her, for her. And that, unfortunately, is a reality of a lot of young black children in America. And I've shared with you how I've gone into the middle schools and elementary schools and the high schools, and I've shared some of my frustrations and disbelief. And every time it keeps coming back to the same thing. Health is an outcome. For those of you who understand statistics and analysis, it's not a dependent variable. If you have stress, if you don't know how to, if you don't have the emotional skill set or the health skill set to cope with depression, constant worry, constant fear, then too often it'll manifest. You'll see it as some form of mental illness or cancer or debilitating illness or some kind of behavioral disorder. That's understood. It's well known. The publishing of psychologists and psychiatrists in the 50s and the 60s when they were using rats and mazes and monkeys and all the like. So there's no mystery here. There seems to be amnesia, that no one can fathom why black Americans have the highest rate of this and the highest rate of that. And you go to conferences and you hear people talk about and show pictures of and diagrams and tell you you can get copies of these diagrams. And nothing is changed, because it would require those who are earning money to earn less. I don't know how many of you know that dialysis in America is guaranteed paid for. the Senate, the U.S. Senate, has a line item for income, and there's only two people in the United States that run every dialysis center in the United States. So this is guaranteed income. This is money whether you want me to have it or not. And yes, you guessed it, the highest number of persons on dialysis are Black Americans. The highest cause for a need for dialysis would be diabetes and hypertension. The highest incidence of diabetes and hypertension are Black Americans. So, Black Americans, you are making other people rich. You are still like a livestock commodity, that you are willing to live in an environment that costs you your life. There is a graph showing that Black American men die up to 6 to 8 years sooner than Black American women, and that white women live longer in the United States than any other group. There's a commercial popularized that I've caught a couple of times called Settlers, and they do a parody because, as you might know, if you did American history, they call the invaders in the North American continent settlers. That if you came from Europe, you were a settler, and you were assigned land pieces despite other people already living there. And you could fight for that land because you were sanctioned to have it. Well, in the commercial, the settler is settling for cable TV and cable things rather than direct TV and satellite things. And he keeps saying, but we're settlers. And one child mentions the clothes they make by hand, homemade clothes. And yes, because we are settlers. And a homemade haircut. And the answer is yes, because we're settlers and so forth. And when I saw that commercial first, it was an annoyance to me, because the term settler to me is invaders. Because when you talk about the refugee incursion into Turkey and Germany and other places, they don't call them settlers. They don't see them as coming into a preoccupied land mass as something good. Germany tried to welcome them, and now they have this huge backlash. But in the romanticizing of America, they called them settlers, and they came in and they did whatever they liked to the native people there and built their fences and killed off and did whatever was necessary to take that land. And here we are, Black Americans, we are settlers. We settle for the worst health in the world, in the richest country of the world. We settle for dying younger. We settle for being obese. I chuckle when I heard a comedian was talking about what was referred to and has been for the last 10 years, the obesity epidemic. He says when he goes to these mega grocery stores, he is amused at the Black Americans who get in the obese mobiles. And I stopped and thought, I said, he's absolutely right. These grocery cart-fashioned wheelchairs or scooters are seldom used by someone who's handicapped. You know, you don't see the Vietnam veteran or the Afghanistan veteran who may have an absent limb or someone who has severe arthritis on these motorized carts. You see these extreme obese persons on these carts. And I don't, when they said these obese mobiles supplied by the grocery store to allow those who can no longer walk under their own abilities are still able to come and collect the poisons that's killing them. It's not funny, folks. We need to wake up. We need to see the reality of our folly. It's time that the people of the United States stop playing and become true citizens of a great nation. I listened to Ray Charles sing the song America Beautiful, and it brought me to tears because it should be, as he sung it, a land of the brave with mountains majesty. Too many of us have been lulled asleep for too long listening to foolishness and tolerating this foolishness from politicians and not thinking for ourselves. Well, thank you so much for joining me today. And until next time, take care. This is Getting It Right with Dr. Bowe.